out that video. Say the website that has the video on it for Lion Drive Entertainment there, John.
It's Lion Drive, L-Y-O-N, just like where Marty McFly lived. Lion Drive, L-Y-O-N, drive.com. And at Facebook, just Lion Drive on Facebook.
All right. Thanks, guys. Good night, time travelers. See you next week with George and Daryl Wolf. And then my little brothers will be in here, and we're doing all Beck. Time travel here with you every Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m. WMFO in Medford. Say to MTV, good night, time travelers. The Big Picture coming up next with Derek.
I get up in the evening, and I ain't got nothing to say. I come home in the morning, I go to bed feeling the same way. I ain't nothing but tired. Man, I'm just tired and bored with myself. Hey there, baby. I could use just a little help. You can't start a fire. You can't start a fire without a spark. This gun's for hire. Even if we're just dancing in the dark. Messages keep getting clearer. Radio's on and I'm moving around my place. I check my look in the mirror. Wanna change my clothes, my hair, my face, man, I ain't getting nowhere. I'm just living in a dump like this. There's something happening somewhere. Baby, I just know you cares. You can't start a fire. You can't start a fire without a spark. This gun's for hire. Even if we're just dancing. Here's some wine, it's on me. I shake this world off my shoulders. Come on, baby, the laugh's on me. Stay on the streets of this town, and they'll be carving you up alright. You say you gotta stay hungry. Hey, baby, I'm just a fast star in the night. I'm dying for some action. I'm sick of sitting around here trying to write this book. I need a love. Even if we're just dancing.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. You can use it once again. 855-915-WMFO. Still steamy. Still... Yeah.
I always enjoy how you are an equal opportunity phone number giver. Because, like, some people like to go by the letters, some people like to go by the numbers. You just get it in for everybody.
No one reads anymore is the problem, so I have to give out the numbers. I don't know. I don't know. We need a texting option is what we need.
I was going to say, like, I don't even know if, are the letters still on, like phone number, like the phone numbers, like when you dial a phone number, I never even noticed.
Yeah,
I'm a numbers gal.
My phone has them, so I'm sure they're there for everybody, but, you know, what we really need is a string of emojis that people can type in, and then they can talk to us, and,
like,
you know.
Smiley face with a tongue out means eight.
Yeah. I think if we went to the emoji standard, it'd just be a nonstop stream of poo emojis coming at me every time I open my mouth. So.
I mean, that's essentially... all I use both in my brain and in my talking.
Yeah.
So.
And then we wonder what's gone wrong with America. How you doing, Shay?
Oh, I'm just dandy. I'm excited for this thunderstorm so that all of us can stop looking like sweaty messes.
Yeah, I think it's just going to get steamy again after that, isn't it? It's just what it does around here.
Well, I guess, I mean, you always tell us the weather, so I guess we're going to find out later in the
show. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that. I think it's going to be bad.
Yes, I agree. But maybe we'll have, like, one brief moment of, hey, it's kind of not feeling like I'm going to melt into the ground.
Yeah, November. That's when we're going to have that, is November.
So we've had some crazy stuff happen, like, locally this past week.
Indeed.
Yeah. This is what Derek and I were talking about as we were walking up the stairs to the station. This, I would say, is the most crazy pants story. That, like, it's the one that I just couldn't. I was like, yeah, I'm talking about this first. So for those of you who don't, you know, read the news or the internet or go outside of your house, two of the top aides to Boston Mayor Marty Walsh were convicted today of conspiring to extort organizers of the Boston Calling Music Festival.
Oops.
Yeah, this is according to the Boston Globe. Kenneth Brissett, who's the city's director of tourism.
Was
the city's director of tourism. I'm getting to that. And Timothy Sullivan, who is the chief of intergovernmental affairs, were charged in U.S. District Court in Boston today with illegally pressuring Crashline Productions into hiring 9 members of a stagehands union to please Walsh, who is a former union leader that has close ties to, you know, organized labor in general. The jurors only deliberated for a few hours, which usually, I mean, if you pay attention to many criminal cases, that's usually a bad sign if the jurors, like, can finish their pizza and be like, yeah, we figured it out.
Yeah.
But they ended up convicting Brissett of both charges he faced, which were Hobbs Act conspiracy and Hobbs Act extortion. And then Sullivan was convicted of a Hobbs Act conspiracy, but acquitted of Hobbs Act extortion.
Yeah.
So obviously, I think we can kind of figure out who the brains and the main culprit behind the situation was.
Well, it's interesting because it's the former tourism director who got convicted of both, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So and the other one did not get convicted of extortion. He only got convicted of conspiracy.
Yeah. So it's like they had the ideas together, and then the other guy pulled the trigger.
One of them is the bag man, and the other one is, you know,
is the one sitting waiting in the getaway car.
And the real, and as usual, the Godfather lives to fight another day, because this one had an interesting trip through the courts because. These charges were originally filed back in 2012, I believe, shortly after Boston Calling. And basically, these guys showed up and said, oh, it's a really nice concert that you got here. It'd be a shame if anything happened to it. And
wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
And they were like, you know, you hire some union guys, and I think everything's going to go okay with your concert. You're going to have a really nice time. Nobody's going to have any problems with anybody. So they wind up hiring 9 union guys for Boston Calling. And this was one of a series of public events and television productions that were complaining about union activities here in the city of Boston. I forget if it was Top Chef or One of the Food Network shows came to town, and they didn't hire the union guys. And the union guys showed up. I'm not saying the union guys did it, but union guys were around. And when people came out to their parked cars, windows were smashed, tires had been slashed. They had the picket lines. They were harassing people on the way in and out.
Yeah, there was a very clear "someone's mad at you" message. Yeah.
And the mayor is just kind of sitting there the whole time saying, it's the union. The union can do what they want. So the original charges in this case, I believe, were filed in 2012. Mm-hmm. They got it thrown out of court in 2014. And then an appeals court came along and said, no, this is going to trial. And it went to trial, and it took a jury 4 hours. To convict?
Yeah, less than 4 hours.
Less than 4 hours to convict. When the jury comes back fast, that means you don't have a good case for appeal.
Oh, yeah. Let's put it this way. Think about... I'm trying to think. I had a case in mind, and now I completely forget it. Well, for those of you who don't know, by the way, the Hobbs Act, just because I know a lot of people aren't like up on section 1951 of the criminal code.
You're telling me everyone didn't go read the Hobbs Act on Facebook today?
It prohibits actual or attempted robbery or extortion affecting interstate or foreign commerce in quote unquote in any way or degree.
Yep.
So, well, what I thought was very interesting about this case, and I mean, these guys are totally guilty. But what I thought was very interesting about it was the prosecutors, who I'm biased because I know one of the, not the prosecutors, the defense attorneys, who I'm biased because I know one of them, but the defense attorneys presented a very interesting defense, which was that they were basically trying to maintain the status quo, that it wasn't them trying to please Marty Walsh. It was them trying to make the concert go smoothly, so as to not have, and again, the incident you mentioned, we don't know that it was the union guys who smashed up those cars, but
could have been some random dude having a bad day, just smashed up all these windshields.
It could have been a bunch of teenagers who thought it was funny.
That's like, right. It's the Utes. It's always the Utes.
But that was their defense, basically, was, we were just trying to make sure the concert went smoothly. Yeah. Like, and we figured appease the union by hiring a couple union guys. But I mean, it's in cases like this, I mean, you have to consider the fact that this is a criminal case. It is. And a lot of times people forget that this is a criminal case because these are people that work for the government and wear suits and drive Mercedes. But we have to remember about when it's a criminal case like this is... these men can afford the really good attorneys.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like the guy from Roxbury who murdered two people.
Well, you know, your union dues do provide legal representation should you need it.
So if they, like I said, they were convicted, and they, when they get sentenced, they face a maximum of 20 years in prison, 3 years of supervised release, and a $250,000 fine on just the conspiracy convictions. And then Brissett, who was convicted of both, like his the extortion conviction carries the exact same maximum penalty. So like, if he got the absolute worst, he's spending, like, he won't spend 40 years in jail, but he's getting sentenced to 40 years in jail.
Nobody's going to prison. They're not going to get any prison time on this.
Of course they're not. But it's nice to think that maybe the law affects everybody equally.
What you have in this situation is the federal court saying, look, we know there's a lot of shenanigans going on with the unions up in Boston. We're not putting up with it anymore. So we're going to take a couple of your guys. We're going to get our conviction. And... that's going to be the message.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, this was very largely like, we need to make an example of these people.
They will get fined. There's no doubt in my mind they will get fined. They'll probably get some sort of, you know, it'll either be 3 months house arrest or it'll be 3 years probation.
They'll get a little slap on the wrist that you do, and the fine maybe, like, I think they'll both get the maximum fine, and then the rest of the so-called sentence will be, like you said, just something kind of like, all right, we got to show them we did something.
Yeah. Supervised release, where you can only travel out of the state 40 times a year. You know, those other 12 weekends, you got to stay home. Sorry.
But, well, as Derek mentioned, as Derek corrected me in saying was, naturally, both men resigned pretty much right after the verdict. Yeah. I mean, it was, you could have, you couldn't have sang an entire song in the time.
There were a lot of these shenanigans that went on when Marty Walsh was first elected mayor of Boston, including this stuff, including Boston 2020, the Olympic bid, which was going to create all kinds of union jobs. When that fell apart, the mayor tried to railroad through that F1 race that was going to happen in the Seaport District. That fell apart. And since all of that came apart, the mayor seems to have really calmed down on his union pushing ways.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he's doing to keep the unions happy, but he's doing something. Because he got reelected, he'll get reelected again. He's mayor as long as he wants to be mayor. So, as long as these shenanigans have stopped, and are actually done, fine. I'm not going to drag the guy. I understand you got elected on the basis of your strength with the labor unions in the city of Boston. Marty Walsh was a union organizer. He was a union president. He was a union guy. He gets into the mayor's office, and all the union boys show up, and they're like, hey,
yeah, like, member us.
What are you doing for us? What do you do? We got you in office. Where are the jobs? And he says, don't worry, I got it taken care of. And he does everything he possibly can. All of it falls apart. And he discovers, and I think the union discovers, oh, we can't just walk around strong-arming everybody anymore.
Yeah.
Even with our guy in the mayor's office, we can't walk around strong-arming everybody.
If anything, I mean, it's quite the opposite, which is that Marty Walsh can't show any sort of preferential treatment.
Yeah.
He has to seem unbiased. And that, I mean, that's something that we deal with. That's something that we deal with in government all the time. Like last year, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but the state treasurer got sent to the state treasurer? I believe so. It was the state lottery commissioner. State lottery commissioner got sentenced because, and he actually did time, or is doing time, because he gave jobs to people who were underqualified,
right?
Because they were his friends and had done favors for him to help him get elected.
Yeah.
And hey guys, that's a big no-no. And yeah, this is basically like a different version of this, but ultimately the same result, which is just like, you can't use, there are many laws in place to say you can't use your political power for personal gain. You can't.
I will be stunned if either of these guys actually goes to jail.
Oh, I will too. I mean, it's going to be like 30 days to make it look good, and then yeah, they'll get out on good behavior.
Yeah.
Because the jails that they're going to, that they would be going to, are like spas anyways.
Yeah.
Like, put me in one of those jails for a month.
But the message has been sent.
Don't actually, I don't want to go to jail.
The message has been sent. And there's some annoyance at the federal level now as well, that this case originally got thrown out. And they're looking into the Boston courts, and they're like, what's going on over there? That we have a clear case of union corruption and public corruption that's just kind of getting tossed out the door. How does that happen?
Yeah.
So, justice is served.
Biggity boom.
Boom. Somerville.
Somerville. I know where that is. We could walk there right now.
Here's another case of government functioning. By the way, for all those of you who think government is going to solve our problems and government is going to protect us and government is going to take care of us,
you're in for a super fun surprise.
Head on over to Beacon Street in Somerville. From the Boston Globe, from glass shards to car doors, cyclists encounter a range of objects and obstacles in their path when commuting along a designated bike lane. But a towering utility pole...
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. That's not funny.
But a towering utility pole that's smack dab in the middle of a painted section of a new cycle track, for many traveling through Somerville on two wheels, that's a new one. Quote, it's kind of weird, said Ian Wolshin, a Somerville resident and bike commuter who encountered the pole in question recently. It's utterly ridiculous. Wolshin took a photograph on Sunday of the wooden utility pole, which is located directly in the path of the green-striped Beacon Street bike lane near the Park Street intersection. He shared the picture to a Facebook group for local cyclists. And the photograph clearly shows a painted green bike lane with a phone pole right in the middle of it. They painted around the pole.
Yeah, that bad boy needs to be about 2 feet to the right. Like a foot and a half to 2 feet to the right.
According to the city's website, in 2016, the Massachusetts Department of Transportation began a multimodal, full-depth reconstruction of Beacon Street, a project that includes the installation of an exclusive bike lane that is separated from the roadway and traffic. The project also features new sidewalks, crosswalks, traffic and pedestrian signal upgrades, and improved landscaping along the busy corridor, which stretches from Oxford Street to Cambridge border near Inman Square. Hundreds of bicycles travel down Beacon Street every day. While state officials had originally planned to wrap up the roughly $11 million project in 2018, work on the thoroughfare remains ongoing. Meanwhile, some bike detours have been put in place during reconstruction. Denise Taylor, a spokeswoman for Mayor Joseph Curtatone's office, stressed in a statement Monday that the bike lane, sidewalk, and road repairs are being handled by Newport Construction under contract with Mass DOT. Quote, "To be clear, this is not a city project," Taylor said. "Nonetheless, we are already in discussions with the state parties responsible for the project to get this addressed and to remedy the situation."
Buck passed.
Scott said the pole is, quote, "not supposed to be there and should have been moved back out of the bike lane as part of the project." Quote, "The design plan set from 2015 clearly shows this Eversource-owned pole designated to be removed and reset by the utility in the brick strip to the south of its current placement. As a state-run project, Mass DOT has a supervisory responsibility for the contractors on Beacon Street." So here we go. There is a phone pole in the middle of the bike path. The city of Somerville says, nope, that's the state's problem.
Not our problem.
State says, nope, that's the contractor's problem. It was supposed to be moved. Meanwhile, in response to this, the city of Somerville has placed crime scene tape around the phone pole as a means of detouring bike riders around it.
Oh, good. So now there's another bigger obstruction. Well, honestly, I'm sorry to laugh at this, and I'm especially
this
if anyone's
ridiculous.
Like anyone's like mistakenly run into this and gotten hurt.
This is hilarious.
But it's hilarious, especially for the sheer fact that it's bright green. The bike path is like, you guys look it up online right now. It'd be one thing if it was the same color as the sidewalk and it just looked like that brick was like part of like an aesthetically pleasing pattern. But this thing is like, rods and cones are hurting green. Yeah.
This is the same shade of green they use for green screen on television.
I was just going to say.
Most people have seen that shade.
Yes, it is the exact same shade as that. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Or if, like, dresses sluts wear on St. Patrick's Day.
Only the telephone pole is not CGI. It's real. And it's really there in the middle of the bike lane. Look, can someone just go over there and move the pole? Really? Did someone?
Well, what is it? It's a telephone. Like, is it a legitimate? Like, it's telephone lines. Like, what is the pole holding?
No, that's holding. It's either holding up a street light or it's holding up utility lines. Interestingly, in this photo, I don't see any utility lines on that side of the street.
That's what I'm saying.
So this one might just be holding up a light, a street light. I don't know, but it's in the middle of the bike lane.
Yeah, and I mean. And honestly, that makes for that. The whole reason that they're doing this whole bike lane project is so that cyclists don't keep having like car doors opened on them and stuff.
Yeah.
But
I take my chances.
Does that thing fail blogged still exist?
I'll take the car door over the phone pole because the phone pole doesn't move.
And you can't yell at the phone pole. I remember one time I was in the car with my dad in Somerville, and he's not used to having like bike lanes and cyclists everywhere. And he opened his door on, I think we were on Elm Street because we were eating in Davis Square. And this girl like literally heard the like of her stopping like just short of his door. She starts flipping out at him. I was like, he's from Quincy. He doesn't get it. I'm sorry. But as someone who used to live in Somerville and, sorry, guys. I know you're good for the environment, but I can't freaking stand cyclists. This is hilarious to me.
There are good ones and bad ones. We got a real problem with them in Wakefield around the lake because there are cars around the lake and there are cyclists around the lake and the cyclists think they own everything. And it's like, excuse me. You know, it's we have to share the road here, and you're squishy and my car is not. So you might want to think twice
about
scooting out around me and giving me the stink eye.
Yeah.
When I'm pulling into a parking space.
Yeah, like we're both human beings. That's my other beef with bicycles is that or cyclists rather, is that they act like a car when it's convenient for them to act like a car. They act like a pedestrian when it's convenient for them to act like a pedestrian. Like, I can't tell you how many times a cyclist has gotten in my way going through a bunch of green lights, and I've been like terrified that I'm going to hit them. And then we get to a red light, and it's, oh no, suddenly I'm part of the crosswalk, and I'm going to almost run down this person walking across the street.
Yeah.
Like, it's my pet peeve.
Yeah.
I do not miss living in Somerville for that reason. This is very interesting. I wanted to get your opinion on this, Derek, because I'm still kind of, I keep teetotaling between like the two, but I don't know if you heard about this new proposed ballot question about voting systems. But it's calling for a new ranked choice voting method in future state elections and primaries in Massachusetts. This is according to NBC Boston. Supporters filed the measure in advance of today's 5 p.m. deadline for submitting initiative petitions with the state attorney general's office. And under a ranked choice system, voters can place candidates in numerical order or preference from their number one choice down to their least favorite. The system allows for multiple tabulations when no candidate receives more than 50% of the first choice votes. And the proposal faces a number of hurdles before it could reach the ballot in 2020. If it was to get approved, it wouldn't take effect until 2022.
Every state that has implemented this
has regretted it.
I don't know that they've regretted it, but you may recall a few years ago, we wound up in a situation where we were cycling through special elections for senators after Ted Kennedy died. Mm. And all of these special elections were happening as people moved around. And we were spending millions of dollars on all these special elections.
Yeah.
The net result of ranked voting in the states that have implemented it, and I don't know if this is true across the board, but I know it is true in a number of them, is that you inevitably wind up having all of these runoff elections.
Yeah.
Because it's, you don't wind up with a clear winner.
I was going to say, that's the thing, is that, I mean, it's, it kind of, it kind of feels like participation voting.
Yeah.
Like participation trophy voting. Like, I was trying to liken this to like something, I was trying to liken this to something in my past, and all I could think of was like when we had mock elections in second grade, like things like that. But the one reason that I said, as I said, I'm kind of going back and forth on this, is because I know that at least in I know that there have been elections where I've been like, I want this guy to win, but if this guy doesn't win, I want this guy to win, and so on and so forth. And it's like, I mean, if anything, on the contrary, what I think would be cool, at least cooler, is if you could say who you definitely want to win and who you definitely don't want to win, and then they get demerits if they get the don't want to win.
I don't know how this particular bill has been written, but I know that there are a number of states that have enacted similar legislation, and usually if other states are doing it, we're copying them.
Yeah.
Like, nobody has any original ideas in government. We'll discuss that later tonight as well. But what happens is, you have to get a certain percentage of voters putting you at the top of the ballot in order to win. So it's not, you know, oh, 10 people voted between these three candidates, and three of them picked Joe, and three of them picked Bob, and one of them picked Steve, but you needed four votes to win, so now we've got to have a runoff between Joe and Bob. And that's where all these runoffs come into it. If you don't get a certain minimum threshold of votes, or a certain minimum percentage of people who rank you first, then you don't win. The lowest people get cut off, and you wind up with a runoff. Which means people who already don't go out and vote now have to not go out and vote again.
Yeah. That's the thing, there's a reason that our founding fathers were like, okay, this way seems to work.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm just saying in terms of popular voting, the Electoral College is gross. But
here's a better idea. Here's a better piece of legislation.
Everyone gets one vote, and you count those votes, and whoever has the most votes wins.
Here's a better piece of legislation that I'd like to see this state pass. Okay? And we could be the first in the nation to do this. Election Day is a state holiday. Everyone is closed. Walmart is closed. Everyone is closed. You can't work. You cannot go to work. Everyone gets the day off. Unless you're, you know, mission critical. you know, first responders, doctors, people of that nature. Everything is closed. It's like Christmas Day. It's bigger than Christmas Day because everything is closed.
Yeah, like everything.
Even Walmart is closed. Everything is closed. The only thing you can do that day is vote.
That's a...
If you don't vote, you pay a $100 fine.
Ah, I like that.
Australia did that.
That makes sense because, well, that's the thing is that, I mean, you look at the voting statistics and then you look at how many people on Facebook or in the world complain about the outcome of elections or complain about the current state of our government. And if you hold those two figures together, there's a 0% chance that some of these people who are complaining didn't go out and vote.
A Venn diagram is a couple of circles that represent different things. And the area where those circles overlap is the commonality. And I can tell you that the commonality between those two groups that you described in the Venn diagram is really, really small. The people who are complaining are inevitably the people who didn't vote.
Yeah.
Everything's wrong. The whole world's falling apart. Did you vote? Who's there to vote for? I'm not going to vote. Voting's stupid. Okay, shut up. I still abide by that rule. If you don't vote, you can't complain.
Yeah, that's. I was going to say, and if you do complain, you get a $100 fine.
Yeah, But Australia actually made it illegal to not vote. And they fine you $100 if you don't vote.
Well, and that's the thing. And it's not like $100 isn't so much that people can say, that's outrageous. But it is so much that people can say, I don't want to lose $100. I should go out and vote.
Well, I mean, for some people, $100 is like, that's a lot of money.
$100, if I had $100 in my wallet right now, I'd be a pretty happy camper.
Yeah. But I mean, there are people who are just barely getting by who are like, you take $100 away
from my budget for the month is off.
I mean, it's like, we're not going to fine the poor. But if you, nobody wants to do the day off. Nobody wants to do the fine. If you combine them, it makes sense.
Yeah.
We're giving you the day off. The only thing you have to do today is vote.
Yeah.
That's it. All you got to do, the bars open when the polls close.
Well, and
that'll make it a really fun day for everybody, okay? The bars open when the polls close. If you don't show up to vote, $100 fine.
Well, and theoretically, too, the nice thing about that system as well is that, you know, we talk very often about how politicians will serve people like them who are rich people. And who does $100 not matter to? Rich people.
Right.
So the people who are going to be more likely to come out and vote to avoid that fine are the very people that we need legislation in the interest of. Because it will be the middle class and the working class. Like it'll be the people who this legislation is really going to strongly affect their lives.
But you're forgetting something here.
What's that?
The rich don't vote because they don't have to.
Because all their friends are politicians.
The rich pick the candidates that the rest of us vote on. Well, that's how the system
but
works.
But I'm speaking more in terms of, yes, that's true to an extent. They choose our candidates. We still vote for them. But I think
even
more
so. Michelle Williamson shows up and screws up everything.
I think even more so, though, with legislation, with bills on the ballot. Because there are, I'm trying to think of like a good example of one from the 2016 election. But there were lots of things that there were definitely a couple of bills on there that I was like, I can see like the type of people that this way would be in the interest of, and this way would be in the interest of, like the one about whether or not porn stars should wear condoms. That one nobody really cares.
Yeah.
Which I hate that that's the only one that's popping into my mind.
Well,
right
we
now.
Had the mandatory staffing for nurses. Bill on the ballot in 2016 that desperately needed to get voted down, and it did.
That's what I'm saying is that like that sort of ballot question like that. That's something that it affects everybody in one way or another, whether you be a nurse or whether you be someone who sometimes needs the care of the nurse, which is everybody.
Yeah.
And if everybody comes out and votes, it's going to equal this is what is probably in the best interest of everybody.
Yeah.
And that's where everybody is not the rich people who are friends with our elected officials. It's the rest of us.
I recommend.
And I'm not going to say it's not the 1%, but you know what I'm saying. It's everybody else. It's the majority of the population.
I recommend being friends with elected officials. Take them out. Buy them some drinks. You'll get things.
I'm friends with one, but he's a Quincy City Councilman. I mean, he's going to maybe possibly get me out of a parking ticket. And you never get parking tickets in Quincy. They don't really care.
Yeah.
Though I suppose now that it's getting all yuppie-ish, that could change.
From WCVB, I'm going to ask you to pay attention to this, and I'm going to ask you to watch the video. Do what you can. Tell your friends about it. Share it. Because I want this guy locked up. I really want this guy locked up. FBI offers reward for information about 3 arsons at Chabad centers.
Yes.
The FBI is offering a $20,000 reward. $20,000, kids. That's a good scratchy. That's a really good scratchy, 20 grand. The FBI is offering a $20,000 reward for information.
You know how to reach our listeners, Dave.
Leading to the arrest of the person responsible for at least 3 arsons targeting Jewish centers in Boston suburbs. Chabad centers in Arlington and Needham were targeted in the attacks. According to the FBI, the first attack occurred around 11 p.m. on May 11th at the Chabad Center for Jewish Life of Arlington Belmont in Arlington. Rabbi Avi Bukiat lives there with his wife and children and teaches religious education classes. 5 days later, around 8:50 p.m., a second fire was set at the same facility. Also on May 16th, the fire was set at the Chabad Lubavitch Jewish Center in Needham just before 10 p.m. The building is home to Rabbi Meidi Krinsky and his family and serves as a synagogue and Jewish outreach center. Investigators said surveillance video collected in both cases shows a man walking to and from the sites of the arson fires. He was described as approximately 5 feet 11 inches tall and was wearing a dark North Face jacket with the hood pulled over his head. Now, these videos are available. You can go to WCVB.com. You can go to FBI.gov. There's a lot of different places you can find these videos. Now, I'm going to tell you, when you look at the video, this looks like the dude from I Know What You Did Last Summer. You can't really see the face. The hoodie is up. The clothes are baggy and kind of loose-fitting. But even with all of that, people in the FBI will tell you that somebody's walk is like a fingerprint. Everybody has a unique gait and unique way of walking.
I look like a gazelle mated with a giraffe.
You may recognize the way this person walks.
And he does have a very specific walk. You're right. It's kind of like a slouchy glide.
And it's one of those things where you've probably had this happen to you where you see someone that you know in a crowd and you don't necessarily recognize who it is, but by the way that they move, that mental connection forms. And you're like, wait, that's... And then you get a little closer, you're like, oh, that's my wife. And you're like, I should have turned around and gone the other way because my wife is here. But that sort
of reaction...
I'm telling
Molly you said that.
That sort of reaction, I look at this and it doesn't mean anything to me. You may look at this video and say, that looks like so-and-so. Don't hesitate to call.
Yeah, because really, like, I mean... It's like anything can catch somebody. Like it's funny because just earlier today I was reading about David Berkowitz, which for those of you who don't know, that was Son of Sam. He was a serial killer during the 70s in New York City, and he was like taunting police. They had nothing on him. They had no idea who he was. He got caught with a traffic ticket. That's how they figured out who he was. A traffic ticket, which just happened to be like a couple blocks from one of the crime scenes. And like something that simple. And that's Derek's right. Like this guy definitely has, I'm watching it again. This guy definitely has a specific trudgy glide.
To be fair to David Berkowitz, he was only doing what his neighbor's dog told him to do. So we have to remember that aspect of this.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
This is true.
This guy nearly killed 2 families. And he tried to kill the same family twice.
Yeah.
Okay. We can't have this person walking the streets. This is a dangerous individual who is either going to kill, he's either going to burn down a Jewish center and kill people, or since he's not getting satisfaction doing things this way, maybe he's the next one that picks up a gun and starts shooting.
And do you know what, honestly, I find the most terrifying about this? He walks to and from. He's walking.
Yeah.
He's walking from arson.
Probably doesn't want the car to be seen on surveillance. Either that or
No. I'm saying he's not running.
Either that. Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying, is he's so casually setting fire to buildings.
Yeah.
Like, No. That part, I totally understand. That, I mean, they could figure it out. Like, they can figure out what a car is without necessarily even getting the plate number.
He's hawking Molotov cocktails at Jewish centers. And that shows a desire to kill and harm, and we can't have this. So...
And not just that, but with, I mean... You don't just, if you're someone who just wants to commit arson, you're going to do it at a bunch of random places. It's going to be like one at a McDonald's, one at a gas station, one at WMFO. Please don't do that.
Yeah.
But this is obviously, you don't specifically attack the houses of one particular religion if it's not a hate crime, if it's not specifically targeted at a specific group of people.
Exactly. This is deliberate. This is targeted. This is a defective individual who does not belong walking on the streets of our cities and our communities. If you have even the slightest suspicion that you recognize this guy, call the FBI. Do not hold back on that. And okay, I don't care if it's your cousin, I don't care if it's your brother, I don't care if it's your best friend, I don't care if it's a guy who lives across the street who you're afraid of. Call. I don't care if you think you're wrong. Call the FBI and let them sort it out.
And it's important to keep in mind, the FBI's not going to go and say, hey, so Susie Sunshine said that she thought this looked like you. They're going to say that they get an anonymous tip. No matter what, whether it just kind of looked like someone you know and they turned out to have an alibi and it turns out to be a complete misunderstanding, or if you help the FBI catch someone who's setting fire to religious buildings, either way, it's not going to get traced back to you.
Right? They're just looking to talk to people. That's all it is.
Yeah.
They're not going to send a SWAT team in. They're going to send an agent to go investigate and find out who these suspects are. Possibly interview them. If you get the wrong person, you got the wrong person. That's it. It goes away.
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't even if it goes in your file, it doesn't matter, as we've seen time and time again in FBI investigations. But we really need to get this guy off the streets.
Yeah. Derek, you're right, because if, like, talk about, like, think about how unsatisfied you are when, like, you try to throw something in the trash and it doesn't go in.
Yeah.
This kid threw a Molotov cocktail at a religious building and it failed to accomplish what he wanted to. He's probably pretty ticked right now.
Yeah.
Which, you know what crazy people do when they're ticked.
20 grand will buy you a lot of blackjack over at the Wynn Casino. This is all I'm telling you.
Yeah,
it is. Oh, we can't call the Wynn Casino Encore Boston Harbor.
The no longer, the casino formerly known as Wynn.
Yeah.
The casino formerly known as Wynn. Oh, they'd be so proud. What are we even calling that now? I don't know.
It's the Encore Boston Harbor.
The Encore. So they kept the Encore part. We just can't say that it's by Wynn.
No, well, everybody calls it the Wynn Casino because it's
because that's
is,
what it was. Yeah,
it's the Encore Boston Harbor.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast. Actually, not as bad. In total, as it has been. Tonight, it's still going to be humid. Hope you like that. Going to be some thunderstorms around. Lows in the low 70s. Air conditioner night. Tomorrow, thunderstorms in the morning. Highs in the mid 80s. Humid. Lows around 70 degrees tomorrow night. But it's going to start to dry out tomorrow night. And then Friday, nice beach day. If you're on vacation, you're going to like this weekend. Mostly sunny skies. High in the mid-80s, low in the mid-60s Friday night. Saturday, a little bit cooler, mostly sunny skies, high around 80 degrees, lows in the low 60s, and then on Sunday, high in the upper 70s, low in the mid-60s, low humidity all 3 days.
I was planning on spending Saturday at the at Hummerock, so that works out pretty sweet.
Dry, cool, nice. None of this steamy suffering that we've been enduring for the last several weeks. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. It is The Big Picture. I am Derek Gary. She is Shea Spillane. When we come back, things are happening. We got to talk about...
We definitely...
We got to talk about what happened over the weekend, but we're not going to talk about it in the usual way. You know what happened.
We all know what happened. If you don't know what happened, seriously lift that rock up from on top of your head.
We're going to try and find some solutions to this tonight. And we're going to try and find some answers. And we're going to try and get to the bottom of this. Because there are certain things that these shootings have in common. And unless we address what they have in common, we are not going to be able to stop this. And believe me when I tell you that what we've seen over the last 2 weeks is potentially just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be back. This is WMFO Medford.
For the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Slow cooking, whether on your stovetop or in a slow cooker, can make the economical cuts of meat taste delicious. Less tender cuts like bottom round and brisket taste best if cooked in moist heat, so they're ideal for slow cooking. Since these cuts usually give you the most meat for your money, you can have economy and good taste. For more information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, 20250.
Ranger Station.
I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
I put out my campfire and Smokey Bear hugged me.
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but he's just letting you know you did good.
Bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update.
I'm gonna let you go now.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
MFO Medford 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Spillane. With me, as always, is the illustrious Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you until 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call, we love to hear from you. Do so at 855-915-WMFO. And Derek, is it like ever going to end? Like ever?
Well, I would imagine it would sooner or later. Because it...
Once we're all dead?
Yeah. I don't need to tell anybody what happened this week.
I was going
to
say, like, if you guys don't know what I'm referencing, just crack open that Google.
Yeah. If you turned on the television, the radio, opened the internet, you know what happened this weekend.
Yes.
You don't need me to tell you. Here we go again.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing that happened the previous weekend.
Yes.
We had... an unhappy young white male open fire on a group of people. And there are different causes, different ideologies that these individuals may follow. But at the end of the day, we had a young, unhappy white male open fire on a group of people. This is not a coincidence. And the response that we are getting from our elected officials and our news media is at best lackluster.
And ill-focused.
And at worst, dangerous.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to figure out how to deal with this all week and trying to figure out what the best way is of presenting this and approaching this so that we can start to get our head around what's going on here. All right.
And just to this, I mean, I was looking around at all these statistics to try to place like to try to really put things in black and white for you. And this is I found this to be for me the most slap you in the face with the truth. Quote, which this is from Judy Woodruff, who is a broadcaster for PBS. And she said she's looking at all the she's looking at all the the things from the gun violence archive, excluding, keep this in mind, excluding, so not including El Paso and Dayton just since yesterday. And this is, so this article was August 5th, so that means that would have been Monday.
Yep.
Just since yesterday, again, keep in mind, excluding El Paso and Dayton, at least 88 people were shot and at least 28 people were killed by guns in 27 states. That is not someone exaggerating. That is not someone making up facts. That is according to the Gun Violence Archive. This is real.
There was a very interesting statistic that popped up on Fox News the other night as I was flipping channels. They were speaking to this particular author. And he noted that of all of the mass shootings that have occurred in the United States of America, only one woman has ever pulled a trigger. And that was the wife of the shooter in San Bernardino. Mm. Tashfeen Malik.
Yeah.
She is the only woman to participate in a mass shooting in the United States of America. The overwhelming number of mass shootings in the United States have been committed by young white men.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over again, yep. We see this.
And the thing is, you don't even have to come up with facts because I want everyone listening to just think mass shootings I can remember and picture who pops into your head. Picture the face of the shooter that pops into your head. 9 times out of 10, it's some teenage, early 20s, white dum-dum.
Now, in some cases...
And I say dum-dum not meaning that they're unintelligent. I say dum-dum meaning they're a dum-dum.
In some cases, Charles Whitman had a brain tumor.
Yeah, and he actually left a note that Charles Whitman's one of my favorite mass shooters. It's a weird thing to say. But the reason that I'm interested in Charles Whitman, though, is because he left a note saying, I know there's something wrong with me.
Right.
So when you inevitably shoot me to take me down, please don't shoot me in the head so you can dissect my brain.
So Charles Whitman had a brain tumor.
Yeah. Pushing on his amygdala.
Some of these shooters have had mental issues. Not necessarily mental health problems or not necessarily schizophrenia or some sort of mental illness that we would easily define. Adam Lanza was autistic. We don't know if that was a contributing factor or not. The people who work with autistic kids swear up and down, know that had nothing to do with it. Well, then maybe there was something else going on with Adam Lanza. Some of these shooters are clearly mentally ill. But for the most part, what we wind up seeing over and over again are primarily white males from decent families. Often from single parent families where there is a divorce.
Yes. That is, I wouldn't say, I did notice that overwhelming trend.
This is one of the things that is common in a lot of these cases, is that these are children of divorce, or these are children of parents who are more involved in their own lives than they are in the kids' lives. Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, their parents were together, but their parents had no idea what those kids were doing.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. They were from Column. That's another thing I noticed, is that they were, these kids, a lot of them were very often from upper middle class. I know now the only thing we know Columbine for is the Columbine shooting, but what you don't know about Columbine is it's actually a really nice town.
Yeah.
It's an upper middle class, like everyone has two cars town.
Now, what they don't all have in common is a motive. Mm-hmm. They don't all share the same political ideology. Of our two shooters this weekend, Patrick Crucius fits a certain mold that I'm going to discuss in a second. He is a far right. We could call him an extremist. He is anti-immigrant. He is anti-race mixing. He has gotten caught up in all of the white supremacist influence that is available online. And that has become his cause and his motive for action. But there's more to his story, and we're going to get to that in a second. Connor Betts, who killed 9 people in Daytona, was an Elizabeth Warren supporter and a supporter of Antifa, and defined himself as a progressive. So this argument that is coming from all corners, that it is politics, it's Donald Trump's rhetoric. That's the first thing everybody says. Donald Trump's rhetoric is causing this. No, it is not. No, it is not. And the second thing everybody is saying is we have a gun problem. No, we do not.
I disagree.
We do not have a gun problem.
I disagree.
This is not about guns.
This is not about guns existing. This is about the amount of access people who should never even hold a gun have to guns. And I also want to disagree with you on that last point. I don't think that all of these kids, I call them kids because no mature human being does something like this.
They mostly are kids, by the way.
I know. But, you know, some of them, it depends on your definition of kids. Some people hear kids and are like a 10-year-old, but
no,
they are, by and large,